This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
And this is the second Saturday. It's the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club. It is an honor and a privilege to discuss Sandra's book, Nudge. Our guests today are Cheryl Pletcher, who was Sandra's wife. Sandra passed away in November 2015. Cheryl knows quite a bit about this novel because she was involved in the research for it. Our other panelist is Karen Richard, an author and a good friend. Cheryl, are you on?
I'm on, Elizabeth. Hi.
Hi. While we're getting Karen on the phone, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, in her words, the documentary that you've been so instrumental in working with Marianne K. Martin and Lisa Marie Evans on.
I would be happy to. Did you say I had 3 hours?
Almost.
Almost. So the documentary started, for many of you who are listening, you're probably familiar with it, but there might be a few who aren't. So in the fall of 2014, Sandra and Marianne K. Martin came up with the idea and the need for a documentation of the women who wrote lesbian fiction in the 20th century. And their concept was to, at some point, turn that into a documentary film. And in the spring of 2016, I would say is when we really kicked off the documentary. We brought Lisa Marie Evans on, who is a filmmaker. She's our director. And we started in earnest fundraising and doing interviews for the film. So to date, we are now in post-production. We actually showed the film to the group at the Golden Crown Literary Society annual meeting in July of this last year as kind of a little preview. We're working on sound, we're working on music, we're working on color modifications, and we're also working on getting authorization to use the stills and the video clips that we've interspersed in the film beyond the interviews that we did. We did 20 interviews of authors ourselves and, of course, own the rights to that footage. But the rest of it, we need, if it's not in public domain, we need to get authorization for that. So that's like 400 pieces. And so we're working on getting all that taken care of. We hope to have the film really ready, you know, for full presentation in another 2 to 3 months, I would say, to have it really ready to go to get to film festivals. We've been fortunate enough to have donations, financial and in-kind donations, that have allowed us to get the film, what they would say, in the can. We are going to begin doing a fundraiser, actually on Monday, you'll see some things, to do a fundraiser to help us with the funds we need to actually distribute the film. So things like DVD, the promotional materials, to get into film festivals, to get the film shown, those types of things. So we're going to be doing some fundraising over the next, I would say, 6 weeks to help build the funds for that. We have not done anything with this film unless we've had money to do it with. We've made sure we had money in the bank and then taken the next step. So we're going to continue with that strategy. It's worked fine. So we're very excited. It's called In Her Words, 20th Century Lesbian Fiction, and it's about 90 minutes in length.
And what is the website?
The website, we actually have changed our website address, and it is inherwordsthefilm.com.
Inherwordsthefilm.com, and no punctuation.
.com. And no periods or capitals or anything, just inherwordsthefilm.com.
That's impressive that you've been able to go into post-production debt-free. Not every project does that, and I commend you.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. It's really been a drive of ours, and we've had such great support. We've had over 150 individuals who have donated in some form or another to the film. We had a family whose father passed away and left a legacy of funds for the children to distribute, and we were blessed to be able to be one of the projects that they helped fund with their father's estate. So that helped us a lot, too.
That's a touching story. I want to bring Karen in here. Karen, you were able to see the documentary in Pittsburgh this past July. Would you tell a little bit about your reaction?
It was so moving to see people whose stories I've read captured and really discussing what motivated them to put their stories, our stories, out into the world. And I am so supportive of the project, and it was amazing. I know it wasn't in its final version yet, but it was pretty close to perfect from where I sat.
I would agree. The buzz I heard from the women around me, people were awed by it.
Thanks, Steve.
I want to ask about the project. Cheryl, would you just tell for a minute how you came to join the project? Because you've been invaluable.
I think most people know I am. Sandra was my spouse, and so when Sandra passed away, Mary Ann approached me and asked if I would be willing to help. Nobody can fill Sandra's shoes, but to help her, and primarily with like project management types of things, and that certainly, you know, is my background. I have a business background, so I was able to help with fundraising and accounting and, you know, all of the maybe legalities and things like that to help support Lisa Marie and Mary Ann with, you know, who have been really in charge of content.
I hope many, many people get to see it at film festivals. And I also could see it being shown in schools and universities, mm-hmm. and at different kinds of festivals, such as women's festivals, music festivals. I could see it being shown at any large literary gathering. What are your plans? Are they broader than film festivals, or you're just thinking that through?
No, we do want to do the whole educational piece, because for those of you, as you two know, knew Sandra. Sandra was an educator, and she was a professor. So it was really important to her when she and Mary Ann originally had this concept for it to get into the universities and colleges part of course material. So we absolutely are doing that. We're going to start with our first two distribution methods are festivals to get the word out, and then also the educational piece that you mentioned. That is our, you know, the kind of next in line for us is distribution through the educational piece. And then also TV. You know, we hope to get the ability to get out on things like PBS or alternative distribution channels.
I certainly think the film is of that quality, that's realistic. You mentioned that Sandra is an educator, and why don't we talk about Nudge now, the book that she wrote. Cheryl, what order did she write her books in? I think they were not necessarily the order in which they were published. Is that true?
That is true. She wrote, actually, the last book that was published, which was actually published after Sandra passed, State of Grace, was that the first book that she wrote. And then the second book that she wrote was Nudge, the one we'll talk about today. And then she wrote Letters Never Sent, and then All We Lack. So the first book published, as you know, was Letters Never Sent. And then Nudge was published, All We Lack, and then State of Grace was last, from a publishing perspective.
Karen, how different is this book from other lesbian novels or just mainstream novels that you have read? Have you read a novel before with this particular plot?
Absolutely not. This was entirely original, and it was so thought-provoking. Some of the best, I know Cheryl is a big nonfiction fan, and while I'm more of a fiction fan, I do read a lot of nonfiction as well. And this was nonfiction, but so clearly very, very well researched, and it really read like a nonfiction book. I've never seen a plot like this. I was in awe, even rereading it all over again, at just how she was able to distill down such complex topics into very, very readable, almost vignettes, particularly when read in companionship with the actual addendum book, how she took even further and distilled those concepts over the major nudges throughout history, how she distilled what their lives meant and the impact that they had. Just stunning.
Cheryl, you mentioned that Sandra was an educator. She taught anthropology. What made her decide to write a book about world religions, and it is highly readable?
It's interesting. It kind of all started sitting in our living room. I am an avid reader of the formation of early Christianity, kind of from, I would say, 0 to 500. And religions in general, I just have an interest in them and different, you know, faith structures and people's different belief systems of people. And so we talked about that a lot. So we've often, as we were sitting around talking, we wish that the world was a place where people were a little bit more understanding of other people's belief system. You might be feeling strong about your own religion, but have some room for others. That, you know, one didn't have to be sufficient, that there were multiple ways for people to believe and have faith. And so that's kind of was the initiation or the start of, you know, Sandra's idea for the book Nudge, because we spent so much time talking about it.
Nudge is definitely, you had mentioned, Cheryl, it's your favorite. It is my favorite. Letters Never Sent, I know, is a favorite of many people. What amazes me is how different each of Sandra's books are. State of Grace is, I think I would call it gritty. It's a psychological suspense story set in Kansas. It's beautifully written. All We Lack is kind of a Murder on the Orient Express type ensemble story. Letters Never Sent is more of a perhaps a traditional romance. Karen, have you read all four books, and what's your reaction?
I'm holding off on State of Grace. I keep saying that once I read that, I'll never have another Sandra Moran book to read. So I haven't read it yet because I'm not ready to say goodbye. But I have read all the other three, and they are so wildly different, you would think, the constant is the perfection of the writing, but for that, you would think that they were written by different people because the voice is unique in each and every story, which is fantastic. And I wanted to pick up on what Cheryl said about wishing that people would be more understanding of the religion of other people. And as I was rereading Nudge, I was thinking, religious tolerance isn't enough. It's not enough that we just tolerate that someone else has a belief system different than ours, but we really have to revel in the fact. I mean, I would love for us to be a society where we could revel in the fact that people have different belief systems, and, you know, what you believe is what is right to you, but your right to your belief doesn't make another's belief wrong. And I think that's where the train jumps off the track in the book and in Nudge, as well as in real life, is when people start thinking that if your belief is different than mine, I have to win. If I have to win, I have to be right and you have to be wrong. And that's where we just step off from where I think we need to be, which is really much more accepting.
The book talks about the other. I think anytime we make someone the other, such as the witches in the Salem witch trials that is covered in the book, then we can dehumanize the person or people and become adversarial. Cheryl, you said that you had something that Sandra had talked about to a book club. Do you want to talk about that here?
Yes, I thought it'd be kind of interesting. I have a piece that Sandra actually wrote. She just wrote it down because she wanted to cover it with a book club that she was participating in when Nudge came out. And if it's all right to you, I'll read Sandra's words about Nudge.
That'd be great.
So Sandra said, "I didn't want to simply write a book of comparative religions. Rather, I wanted to show how all belief is, at its core, the same experience. But to do that, I had to remove personal bias and emotion from the equation, so that regardless of whether I was discussing Christianity in its many forms, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Mormonism, whatever, that I treated them all the same. So from the beginning, I established several rules for myself. Number one, the first was that I would look at all religions not with the idea of one being better or more correct, but just different. Two, I approach each belief system with understanding they are all supernatural. And by this, I mean something that cannot be proven through science or reason. Number three, and to that end, I accept that no religion, when examined critically, made sense. whether we're talking about an omnipotent bearded white guy in the heavens or a pantheon of gods and goddesses who dole out favors or punishments as they see fit, when you look at each religion objectively, none of them really make a lot of sense. Four, which brings me to the key element of all of this. Belief in the presence or absence of a higher power must be taken as a matter of faith. For this intangible thing to be real, people must believe it's real. And finally, though I was presenting an alternative and fictionalized interpretation of events, the research and information in which I couched it had to be factual.
I want to read here, if you don't mind, Cheryl, what Carlene Spry wrote in 2014 in a review. It follows up, I think, on what you just read. What Moran does so well is to present her very detailed research to Sarah, and thus the reader, in a way that is interesting and accessible. This isn't a case of you better read everything here, whether you like it or not. Instead, I wanted to read every word of that research. It was fascinating. I think I learned more about world religions from Nudge than I did in the two religion courses I took in college. I agree with that. I had two religion courses in college, and I learned so much from this book. Karen, what about you?
I actually had, I went to a Catholic university, so I had three religion classes as a requirement to graduate. And yes, I did. I learned more about religious traditions that differ from my own than I did in any of the religion classes that I took. One of the things that struck me about the way Sandra presented all the religions was that the differing religions were really sent as messages of course correction. So the religious traditions that were in existence prior to Muhammad, for example, weren't meeting the needs of a certain group of people. So we needed, infinity needed to bring something along that would provide that faith for a group of people that had been marginalized. And I really liked what Sandra wrote when she said in the addendum about Muhammad, when she said that the mission was to provide a new religion in the form of Islamic belief and to serve as a religious catalyst to make Christians more Christians and Jews more Jewish. So the purpose of these course corrections in the book were not to displace a religion or to say to the followers of a specific belief, hey, you're wrong, but rather to say, this established religion is not meeting the needs of a particular group of people, so we're going to come up with, we're going to nudge into being another religious tradition, or what will become a religious tradition, that will meet the needs of the people that have been marginalized by the existing ones. And I love the way she put that. It's to make Christians more Christians and Jewish people more Jewish. It's not to say you're wrong. It's to have you really look at something critically and reinforce the faith that you already have, which I thought was fascinating.
You mentioned infinity in this novel. Infinity is God in all religions, and innumere is, for instance, Jesus, Muhammad, and Martin Luther, and innumere is Moses, Judas. It's a fascinating concept. I haven't seen the Trinity addressed that way. Cheryl, I want to ask you about the research, because I know you've read a lot on this topic, and it would be tempting to go too deep into the history and the factual information, and this book, in my opinion, really doesn't do that. Karen used the word distills, and I like that very much. How did Sandra manage to corral all of the research, and I know you had a hand in that, into a readable novel?
Boy, you know, I guess I would say that's just Sandra. That, you know, she just was brilliant. I don't know what other word to use for her. She was just able to take information and turn it into something understandable so quickly. And she did that, that's why all her students loved her. Everybody, whatever class she taught, that's what they wanted to take, because they learned. She made complex issues seem simple and understandable. And I feel like she did that, and Karen mentioned it too, she did that in this book. I mean, she read a lot about all these different religions, and Sandra was very quick. She consumed books quickly. She not only consumed them, but understood them. So she was a very fast reader. she accumulated what she felt she needed to build the key story behind each one of these major faiths, and then wrote it in a way to what you two have said, and for me too, in a very understandable format, and made you want to read it, like you said, Elizabeth. It's like you want to.
And the overarching theme seems to be we all basically worship the same God, which could be seen as simplistic, but the way it's treated in the novel, it's not. Do you agree, Karen?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's choosing to look at religion from a basis of the commonality, which, as Cheryl mentioned in the reading she did for Sandra, is at the base of all religions, there's a faith. There's something that cannot be explained through scientific method. It cannot be positively proven or disproven. So all religions have an element of faith. And where I think, again, as a society, we tend to fall off the tracks a little bit is instead of focusing on we all have a faith and a belief, we focus on the differences between our faiths and get into that whole, I have to be right, which means you have to be wrong, which is so problematic. But I was just glancing at the research utilized in the back of Nudge, and she had 19 different sources listed there of things that she had looked at and distilled down for both, I think, Nudge and the addendum. And yes, I agree, Cheryl, that her ability to read, understand, and distill complex concepts was just unmatched. It's fascinating.
There were times when I read something and I almost glossed over it because I thought, and then I went back and I thought about it. For instance, she makes the point in the book that humans are binary. The mind is like one big computer full of binary oppositions to impose structure, warm versus cold, night versus day, acceptable versus taboo, heaven versus hell. And I thought, that really is true. We tend to say this or that when there could be a gradation or a gray area. Cheryl, do you want to address that?
I'm with you, too. I think that's one of the points Sandra was trying to make. I think, wasn't it Bart who said that in the book?
I think so.
One or the other, is that there isn't necessarily a right or a wrong. There's a line of different people, even human beings, a variation of humans, and a variation of human beliefs. That's what Sandra's point was there, in my mind, too, Elizabeth.
Karen?
You know, it was interesting, because I read that part, too, but then there was another piece that struck me that also seemed to me to be Sandra with her warm and openness. She said, and this is a quote from the book, too, where Infinity says to Sarah that, I hold all sexes equally. And Sarah said, what do you mean all sexes? I thought there were only two, which plays on that binary. So you would think that that hot, cold, good, evil would come right into this with male, female. And instead she did something that I found fascinating. She goes on in the book to say, Infinity says, no, Sarah, biological sex comes in a variety of forms. In humans, there is decidedly male and decidedly female, but then there are also various degrees of each and sometimes both. So I think that at the same time she was talking about the way it's most comfortable for people to think in a binary, she also wasn't marginalizing people who feel outside of that binary in a way that was prescient, I think, to some of the discussions that we have today about non-binary that was not at the forefront of discussion when Nudge was written. So I agree with binary, but then she stepped off of it, I think, in a time and in a place and in a way that was ahead of her time.
Such a good point. We're going to need to take a break here. I have a song, and we're going to come back and talk some more about Nudge by Sandra Moran.
There must be a time, there must be a place when everyone will finally come together. If there is a God with a human face, I'm sure he'd want us all to come together.
This is the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club. I'm Elizabeth Anderson. I'm on the show with Cheryl Pletcher and Karen Richard. You were just listening to Susan Werner. The song is Together from the Gospel Truth. And I want to tell you how this song came to be on the show today. I have hundreds of CDs, and I just flipped through looking for one that might work. But in this case, there was a CD on my steps in the front hall, and I thought, what's this? I don't remember putting it there. It was The Gospel Truth, and all the songs fit this particular book, but this one in particular spoke to me. It appeared. I want to talk a little bit about the song's premise, which is together. I think there is a real divide in this country right now. People yelling at each other, social media, on television, in personal gatherings such as holiday dinners. And what I want to ask is this book more relevant than ever? And I'll start with you, Karen.
As I was rereading it, that's exactly what struck me. As I was listening to that song, I was making a note of some of the things that the reread struck me and how the message resonates for our time. One particular instance of that was when Sarah was learning about Joan of Arc and the reason that Joan of Arc was sent to nudge humanity. It was imperative to remind humanity of the ability of one person to exact change if they are steadfast in their belief. And I think that is particularly resonant for us in the world that we're in now, because it's so easy to look around and say, whatever your political beliefs are, that things are not going in a direction that makes me happy. Children in cages, religious oppression, there's all kinds of things that make you just think, what can I do? How can I help? What could I do? And I think that message that if you are steadfast in your belief, one person has the ability to exact change. And I think that you need to be not just steadfast in your belief, but you also need to stand up for the things that you think are right and to take the actions that you need that support those beliefs. And if the change is big like it was with Joan of Arc, or if it's small, if it's just a drop of water, that's one more drop than there was before. So I think the message of the book is even more important today than it was when it first came out.
I completely agree with you, Karen. Every time I read Nudge, I just wish that we could just put a copy in everybody in the world's hands, not just put it there, but make sure they read it, because I think it could make such a difference in how we treat each other. And one of the things, in fact, this happens to be on page 121. It's where Sarah's talking to Infinity, talking about these nudges, these people who have come back to nudge people towards, to bring them back to their faith or to help those, as you mentioned, Elizabeth, who there's a niche missing and we need to fill it with religion. But Sarah says she found that she considered the implications of what she was hearing. And these nudges were famous people from history. As I said the other day, many were, Infinity said. Others were not. Their job was to connect and make impacts on personal, more intimate levels. I think we all have the ability to be a nudge in that respect, to make a difference, and just one at a time. I read Nudge, and I said it many times, that Sandra wrote about herself. She didn't even know it, but Sandra's a nudge. And Sandra, the impact that she made as an individual.
You anticipated me. I was going to ask that question. Do you believe that Sandra is a nudge? Because I've heard quite a few people say that she was, and she certainly was, as far as I'm concerned. She did change people's lives and serve as inspiration. Karen?
Oh, 100% agree. And the publication of this book, I agree to Cheryl that if we could get a copy of this book in everyone's hands and make them read it, that would be amazing. The first thing I did when I finished reading Nudge the first time back when it came out was order a dozen copies that I could leave in airports as I travel around the country, hoping that people will pick them up and get the word. But yes, I think Sandra was a nudge, and I think that whether she was the kind of nudge that has the Joan of Arc kick the English out of France sort of impact, or if she was the more personal nudge that Cheryl was just talking about, I don't think we know the answer to that yet. I think there is more impact to be seen from her writing than has yet come about, and it may lead to a greater impact that she has. But I think there's no doubt that she changed people's lives through her writing and just through her teaching and through her life.
Something that she talked about on the radio and she also wrote about was the importance of connections. And I think that is so important, and we see it in this book. Cheryl, how do you feel about that theme, connections, in pertaining to this book?
Connections in people, as in the 6 degrees of
yes.
Moran kind
uh-huh.
of connections.
Exactly.
Yeah, she writes that throughout, you know, it's interesting, the connections that you see within the people within the story, like Abraham's connection with Salima, and then also Fiona's connection with Enumere throughout the different Enumeres that come into the world. So, yeah, I think she shows the connections of people quite well through the book.
And we didn't get to know him very well, but Rainer, in a sense, had a connection to Bart because they were always arguing over historical facts. I do have a question, and I want to know how you both feel about the prologue. Normally, we wouldn't talk about a spoiler, but the spoiler is basically in the prologue. How did you feel about that? If you had your druthers, would it be present or missing? Karen?
I am happy with the way that it came out to be present. I honestly got so caught up in the story that I sort of forgot about the prologue until it was coming upon that scene near the end of the book. And then I'm like, oh, no. And at a time, too, I thought, well, maybe it is blanks in the gun. So I think it didn't give away the whole story because there was an alternate explanation that could have been offered for the prologue. I think it set the stage very well for the book. So I was okay with it.
Me, too. I'm with Karen. I was fine with it. And I have the same issue that you did, Karen. It's like you get so wrapped up in the book later, you kind of forget that you read it. Until towards the end, when it starts to resurface again, or the end game, I guess you'd say, starts resurfacing again. But it was fine for me, and it jars you into the book for sure.
It did.
How about you, Elizabeth?
I think I'm fine with it because, as you both said, I was so wrapped up in the book, I kind of forgot about it until the end. There is a twist, which I won't give away, at the end that adds to the prologue. So you don't know everything, as Karen intimated. I want to ask, too, about the book cover. I note it was done by Treehouse Studio, Anne McMahon, famous author and designer. It's an eye-catcher. Do you want to talk about the book cover, Cheryl?
All I can tell you about it is, of course, it's off the Sistine Chapel, the ceiling, right? It's an element of that. And all I can tell you is that Sandra loved this cover. Anne is so talented in cover design, as you all know, and most people listening who read lesbian fiction know, but Sandra absolutely loved it, and she thought it really spoke to the book.
I think you would see a cover like that, and the finger is iconic from the Sistine Chapel, so I think almost everybody would know that that's what this is. But breaking apart what, I don't know, could be the Rosetta Stone? Are we cracking the finger of God? Cracking the code of the Rosetta Stone? Is that what that is about? Or is it pushing the nudge, right? Is it pushing the nudge into the place where they can make the greatest impact? I think there's a lot of ways to look at the cover, and they're all intriguing.
I think, Karen, you should be teaching criticism. I wanted to mention here that there was someone that criticized the book because it was not a lesbian romance. And I just thought, what on earth? Because that's like having a lasagna and saying, I don't like it, it's not spaghetti. This book is so many other things. It's history, it's theology, it's suspense. It's so intricately woven that I think to say it's not a lesbian romance is true, but that's hardly fair to the novel. Cheryl?
I completely agree with you. You know, Sandra, when she first, well, let me say this, the first draft of this book, actually, Sandra did, was November 26th in 2008. And it was written with a male lead. Sarah Shepherd was Josh Morrow. Sandra wrote, of her four books, truly, two of the four really were not lesbian-centric books. This one, and also State of Grace is not. So Sandra just had stories to tell, and that's what she did.
She certainly did. So many of the criticisms that might be raised by someone who hasn't read the book, oh, this is mocking religion, and it absolutely does not. Or the book talks about advances in technology, and there's a line, so many people worry that advances in science demystify religion or belief, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Science only shows the underlying connectedness of everything. And I do believe that.
I 100% agree. It makes it possible for me to be friends with people that I've never met, right? I mean, that's what Facebook does for us is, you know, I knew you on Facebook, Elizabeth, before I met you.
That's true.
And so I think that connectedness allows us to connect in a way that was not possible prior to the technological advances. I also want to just go back for a moment to the criticism about this book not being a lesbian fiction book or a lesbian romance book, because I think that people read for different reasons, and I think they have expectations when they read, and some people really want to read not to be challenged, but to escape. Mm-hmm. And I say that 100% without judgment. If you look at my Kindle, they're mostly lesbian romances that are on there because I enjoy that. When I want to be comfortable and I don't want to be challenged. You cannot read Nudge without being challenged. And I think that that maybe is the unexpected element of this that makes it hard, whether it's being read by a lesbian audience or any kind of audience with an expectation. This book is going to challenge you, and it's going to, if you read it with an open mind, it's going to make you think about things in a way you've never thought about them, about faith, about religion, about connectedness, as you just said. I don't agree that it's a fair criticism that it's not a lesbian romance, right? I mean, it is not a lesbian romance, so I suppose that is a fair criticism, but I don't think it should be judged as though it were, because it really is a challenging book that makes you think and question and learn, and that sometimes is not what people want when they pick up a book in our genre.
It's understandable, too, Karen, for the readers, and, you know, I don't find fault with the person who said that, because if you read Sandra's first book, Letters Never Sent, and you have an expectation that her next book is going to be something similar, this was not something similar. So you certainly can see how someone could make that statement, as you say, not necessarily fair for the book, but I understand how somebody could find that an issue if they read Letters Never Sent first.
Velvet Lounger, whom you both know, is a reviewer, and she says that it isn't a romance like Ms. Moran's first novel. In fact, it is quite hard to know what to categorize it as, containing history, religion, social comment, perhaps even a political religious treatise. More than anything, it becomes a novel of suspense as we follow Sarah's fluctuating emotions and reactions to the information she is fed and the characters she interacts with. And then she refers to Sandra's writing style as exquisite, that the people who populate Nudge are deep, layered, multifaceted, credible, and wholly absorbing. And I think we haven't talked a lot about the characters, but I found Nathaniel fascinating. Karen, do you want to talk a little bit about your reaction to him?
Yeah, there always has to be a bad guy.
There does.
Because otherwise, I mean, if everybody's good, it's kind of boring. But, I mean, was he a bad guy? He was acting the way he acted in all his manifestations. And I think probably the one that people are most familiar with is that he was Judas. He betrayed Jesus Christ for 30 pieces of silver. And I think that alone makes people think, oh, this is a bad person. But as you read the book, you realize that no matter what happened, right? I'm thinking about the Salem witch trials portion, where Rebecca Nurse, the first jury found her not guilty because she was such an upstanding woman. And then the judge sent him back and said, I need you to reconsider. And the governor tried to pardon her. And then political pressure came down and he wasn't able to. So, and whether Judas had betrayed Jesus or someone else had done it, it was necessary that betrayal take place for the message to get out. So you can look at Nathaniel as a bad guy, or you can look at him as a character that had to play the uncomfortable part, the uncomfortable role that would allow the message to come out. So very nuanced, difficult to like, to be sure. I mean, he did have some petty jealousies of the relationship, but I think he had to do the things that he did, because otherwise the nudges wouldn't have had the impact that Infinity needed them to have.
Do you agree, Cheryl?
I do. And another character is Fiona. I really liked, and I thought it was neat how Sandra has Fiona play a major role with Enumere throughout each time Enumere's been there. Fiona has been there in one way or another, too. So I thought that she was another one that just, like Karen said, with Nathaniel, just it had to happen. She had to do what she had to do for the nudges to work.
What Karen said about Sandra being ahead of her time, there's a lot of talk now about genders and gender variance, and Fiona certainly exemplifies that. Because she, through history, has taken on different incarnations. One thing I want to ask you both is, in reading the addendum, which is the book after Nudge, it's what Sarah Shepherd was working on, Sandra sets up such an expectation all the way through Nudge that the addendum is going to be such an important work that you really think, wow, this must be something. Does it fulfill its promise?
100%. 100% I think it does, because the goal here was not to make a weighty treatise that would influence people that read it critically but really not really be read by most people. It was to write an overview that was accessible to people of all belief systems that really reminded us we have more in common than we think. And I think the addendum was extremely successful in that message. And I like that at the end of Nudge, it was on the top of the New York Times bestseller list for the 54th week in a row. I think the addendum was very successful. I don't know how she pulled it off, how she distilled that much information into the 40-some pages, 50 pages of the addendum. But anybody who hasn't read the addendum as a companion to Nudge should definitely pick it up and read it. I just want the world to know, too, that I was happened to be standing at the publisher's booth when the addendum books arrived, so I got the first copy for sale of the addendum, and Sandra signed it and noted that it was so cool that I get the first one.
Awesome. Yes, I think the addendum really pulls it off. It's 50 pages. It's a fast read for a society that needs it, and that was what she says throughout, and when Infinity says throughout the Book of Nudges, it's got to be readable. It's got to be, you know, in the language that people read. And the conclusion is perfect. I mean, the conclusion, basically, it says, though their objectives and roles in history differed, Infinity repeatedly provided us with the opportunity to take to heart certain moral imperatives, concepts, and life lessons that are universal. The commonalities, kindness, forgiveness, and tolerance, are not the property of just one right religious belief system. They are seen in all religions. And then she proceeds to give you a small paragraph from each one of the religions on how the do unto others is an element of every single one of them. I think it's a great piece. And Elizabeth, before we get away, there's something I really wanted to say too, is Sandra was so fun and so funny for those of us who know her. And I loved how she placed humor in Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
Infinity had some really great fun and funny lines through the story. I remember the one where Infinity, if you remember, Sarah fell and was all bruised and everything. And Infinity, at the end of one of their calls, says, "How are you feeling? Are you feeling better?" And Sarah says, "Yes, I'm still bruised, but I figured you knew that already." And Infinity said, "I did, but people like to be asked."
I like the way Infinity's voice was compared to a butterscotch.
Yes.
And again, not distinguishable as male or female. The sense of humor is definitely there. We're running out of time, so I just want to thank you both for being on. This was a book that everyone should read, as you said, Cheryl. And Karen, thank you for leaving them in airports. So thank you both.
Thanks so much, Elizabeth. Thanks, Karen.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Cheryl.